Yes, you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant, and this is Now We're Talking. Michael Antonakos is an accomplished actor with numerous stage, film, television, and voiceover credits to his name. Michael is a versatile performer and always seems to be pursuing a variety of projects with relentless determination and focus. And he's here in the studio with me now. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks. That was quite the opening. I feel very special.
Good, man. Well, we were speaking before the show. I was reminiscing about when we did a show together at the Arts Club. I guess that was a while ago. It was a few years ago. Time really does fly. And we sat next to each other in the change room. And I remember you were really, like, with laser precision, I focused on working on some cartoon characters for voiceover, which at the time was maybe a relatively new thing for you. Now it's really unfolded into your main bread and butter these days, it seems like.
Yeah, thankfully, continually working on my voice. But yeah, it's lifted me off into different areas.
Yeah.
A lot in commercial radio work and video games and such, so.
I was saying in the intro and talking there about the versatility and the variety of versions of acting and performance. I'm curious what that's like for you to have a lot of things at your disposal. I mean, obviously, it's a good thing to be versatile, but is it ever a challenge to have so many plates spinning in the air?
Yes.
It is, eh?
I love creating. My biggest issue is following through always with the creations that I come up with and finishing them.
Right.
Because it takes me a long time. I find that great idea, man, and then, okay, let's do this one project, go straight through all the way to the end. I wish I was that guy. I'm like, hey, here's a great idea. Let's take 5 years and I'm going to do them all.
Yeah. And it feels impossible, right? And yeah. That's my concern, is the idea of having a lot of things half finished. For me, I relate to this with songs, a lot of half finished or three quarters finished songs, and feeling like they never get done. And it can be very stressful. So anytime I talk to somebody who I know has lots of things going on, I'm curious about this and what it is like to complete things or to push through in any given area. And I know you've had success in all of these areas. We talked about voiceover before we did the show. And I know you've done a lot of television appearances. I know you've had a lot of success doing stage stuff. Do you have to articulate which area you want to work on in a given year, or you just cast a wide net and see which materializes?
I'm more of the cast a wide net.
Yeah.
For my career, I noticed younger that just because I have a different look per se, I'm going to be limited from outside perspective on me. And I didn't want to be. I was like, I saw myself as, you know, anyone, and I could play any role that I felt I would be well suited for, I could do. I just noticed that just image based in our society and our, you know, especially in the industry for film, television, and even theater, my image is going to be the most challenging thing for some people to cast me. And so I was like, well, make myself diverse. And how can I do that? So I focused on my physical body, as far as like maintaining just structure, but playing. So that got me into motion capture. So I was able to use my body as a physical tool and perform.
Right.
And I didn't have to worry about my look.
Right.
And just so everyone knows my look, I'm Greek background. I'm Mediterranean. I'm a decent looking human being.
And I can attest to that. It's true. He's not being immodest.
But just because I happen to have a bit of an olive tone to my skin, thicker eyebrows, this and that, it's like you're already going to be placed in certain ways.
Right.
You know, theater productions a lot of time only cast me as ethnic roles, such as Hispanic, the one we did.
Exactly.
Played, Richie Valens.
Right. You fit into this box.
Yeah, you fit into here and this and what's nice is the industry is changing a little bit now to diversify, which is lovely. But as far as my career went, I was like, I need to learn how to use my whole instrument, my physical body. And so I then said, I need to use my voice too. How can I use my voice to its fullest potential and play with it? And then that started leading me more to the voice world. And still pursuing my theater and film and continuing in that way, but really taking off, actually, with the voice and physical aspect.
And does that protect your mental health in a way also? Because I'm thinking about the journey of an actor if they haven't found these other opportunities. to express their artistic selves and to generate some income and to see some trajectory and progress in their career. If they haven't found that and they really are completely relegated by an image-based reality. I mean, it's like it could be the culture of entertainment, but also there's just a reality to it that might be hard to shake. I think about what that does to somebody's self-esteem. You know, it's such a precarious path, I feel like, to... It's such a competitive world, acting is, that if you're, you know, I think about what that must be like for young actors to constantly be put into those boxes and stuff. So do you think that that's protected your self-esteem in a way to have diversified in this way and to see that you have a trajectory that's not relying on how you look? Because, of course, I say this because I know you as quite a potent individual, spiritually, as an intellectual, what have you, that is kind of... incidental to what you look like. You know, what you look like is just a small part of who you are.
Yeah.
So it's such a, to me, it seems like such a precarious thing to be evaluated based on what you look like.
Oh man, the stuff I've heard, just to jump into that for a second, like you're not white enough and you're not dark enough.
Right.
So you're not ethnic enough. That's kind of the way they've right. said. I've had both those. I've had you're too good looking to play the sidekick, but not good looking enough in the stereotypical form to play the lead.
Right.
I'm like, oh, okay, so where do you put me? So if I didn't try to diversify, I would be I'd be a broke, struggling actor attempting to, you know, do what he loves, but I'd probably be serving tables like I was growing up. You know, it's.
And you mean broke financially, but do you think you'd be broken like on some emotional level too?
Be tough. I know myself enough to know that I would, if I needed to, I'd just go out on the street and start singing.
Right.
Just to fulfill that need of giving through performance. And
right.
I realized I'm an expressive being. That's part of my, you know, life. Love is I like to feel, I like to express, be in the moment and feeling that. So
yeah.
I know I probably would have found a way, but apart from that, absolutely. I think I would have. And I've always felt that over the years, moments of being crushed, you know, and I think all actors have to go kind of through that. It's part of the ego killing, I call it.
Yeah, which can maybe be constructive to help kill that ego.
Yeah, help kill the ego. But I'm grateful that, you know, at least going in this route for me has been quite abundant and lovely, and I actually really enjoy doing it. It's just different than when I started out thinking, which trajectory would I go in?
Right.
I had no idea this is the way I'd be going. And that's kind of led me to believe that life is kind of an open book. Just
yes.
For me, throw out a net.
And, it zigs and zags.
Yeah.
It's a point well taken when you say, well, if I need be, I just go on the street and start singing, because that's what I did. That's exactly what I did. For me, that was really the beginning of me getting paid to perform, which is always an important threshold to cross if you're seeking to be a professional. And that's what it was for me. I was like, I'm sick and tired of waiting for opportunity. I'll just go. This is in Victoria, where I know you spent time as well.
Yeah.
In the Inner Harbor, I just go down into the Inner Harbor and busk. And for me, it was so, so empowering for me to have control over when I perform, how I perform, what I perform, all those circumstances, and to not just be the person that's been cast into this role, but that has created this performance event that is occurring. I just found it so empowering.
Yeah.
So when you say that you have an instinct to do that, I think, I guess that's what I'm kind of driving at, is it feels like, by all means, there's a value in going through a process of auditioning and being selected to be a part of a project, to be a part of bigger things that are bigger than you. But I think it's really important, and I see in your example the significance of simultaneously making sure you have some influence over some things that you're doing too.
That's funny. That's what you're saying is really, and it's key and very important, and something I've noticed in myself. My whole life, I, as an actor, I've been told what to do. I've been directed, or I've been put in by producers in all in any sort of form.
Right.
It's me filling a spot kind
yes.
of a thing, and then being like, okay, do your part in this.
Right.
And then when you get into the, for me, this is the newer role, which is I'm the creator role, and then you start producing your own thing, whatever that is. Like, I'm writing a children's book that it's been taking me forever to finish. And then working on other films and projects that I've been writing with writing partners. And then you get to this point where, like, okay, there's a step here that I'm absolutely petrified about, which is the unknown step. And
yeah.
I know what to do when someone tells me what to do. But I'm actually clueless when it comes to, I need to do this. I'm the one who's in kind of the lead of this project.
I'm driving this train here.
And I think that's probably one of my greatest obstacles and fears, because it's so foreign to me to be able to do that. Even if you, it's different to me if a producer hired me as a director.
Right.
Great, because I'm just the person who tells the story.
Yes.
I'm the creator of the story in the sense of visual form, right, to help sort of pull the team together and,
right,
fulfill that. But
then you're still producers, like, Michael, on this date, come to this place,
yes,
and do this thing.
Exactly.
Like, you're still given sort of a context,
yeah,
and a framework.
But to me, be the guy, like, set the date, set the thing,
yeah,
create the thing, make that, call all the people, put them all together.
And to justify the whole thing in terms of what the outcome of the thing is going to be, when you have no knowledge of whether it can be. It's just, it's incredibly, incredibly daunting, and just sort of going on a tightrope without a safety net, eh?
Exactly. And to the people who out there who can do that, I love and commend you.
You know what it is? When I think about this, again, coming back to that example of busking, and we're also talking about creating original, maybe film projects, I think you were alluding to there, yeah, is there's something about immediacy. You know what I mean? So for example, if you're creating a film, there's such a long life,
yeah,
to that process of what's the idea? Let's conceive of the idea. Let's write the thing. Let's do drafts of the thing. Let's shoot the thing. Like, it goes on and on and on. It's got a long life, and you don't know. There's a lot of money that needs to be involved. Like, there's a lot of things that need to happen in terms of time and money and people. There's a lot of moving parts. And with something like you going out on the street and singing, it can just happen. You and I can go do it as soon as the show finishes, and it'll happen.
Oh, yeah.
It will have happened. It'll be over. And you can think, how did that go? And there's such a long, long process to something like, I'm going to make a film, for you to get to that place where you can say, how did it go? You know, that I think for me, when I think about this, that would be the intimidating part for me, is that lack of immediacy means you don't have the opportunity to kind of see what's come of the thing. It's going to take a while. So I think that for me, that would be the challenge of that, is the patience. You have to be so patient.
That's the one thing I'm sort of been more lenient on myself and understanding, is that, you know what, maybe don't put a time limit on it. Maybe just do one day at a time, step by step. And when you can do it, work on it. When you can fulfill time, do it.
Yeah.
And so far, that's been really cool. I've just been kind of focusing on my career and my life and my, you know, family and all that stuff, and then filling in little bits of time, and rather than pressuring myself, because the pressuring I noticed got just too hard on my psyche and my soul. And it's like, you know, even if it didn't happen in the whole scheme of life, it's okay. But do you want it to happen? Yes. So are you going to do your best to make it happen? Yes. Just do it one day at a time. Little by little, little by little. And there was another, you know, Tim Ferriss probably.
Yeah, yeah.
He said, like, just write 2 pages a day when you're writing. And I thought that was a great, don't do too much. Just do something that makes you feel fulfilled.
Yeah, I think it's very human for people, yeah, who want to do a given thing to say, well, if I'm going to do this thing, I got to climb this mountain today.
Yeah.
You know, and it requires a sort of, it requires... I think we all need to learn this and then abide by this to realize that to accomplish goals, it can be done incrementally. I refer to it as incrementalism.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, for me, I lost a bunch of weight earlier this year, and it really was just a matter of just...
He looks good, by the way.
I sure do. And thank God it's an audio medium, so you can just leave that to chance. But that's something that I noticed that I've tried to transfer to other areas of my life, is just realizing if you... have the patience to just have small gains add up. They will add up.
Yeah.
It's like this, like the analogy of compound interest or something. Just give it time, allow it to add up. And I think what happens for a lot of us is we lose patience with that, understandably, because the emotions get in the way, and then we abort. We don't hang in there. I mean, this would be true for people with physical exercise or something. They might exercise when they feel like it, rather than having a discipline. Or you talked about meditation earlier as well.
Yeah.
You might meditate when you feel like it, rather than make it a practice, something you do regularly. And I think the gains in anything come with consistency and regularity, right?
Yeah. I think there's... I mean, at least I found consistency is really nice. I have a harder time with the discipline of it all the time, just because of my lifestyle.
Yeah.
And for those who try to understand, living as an actor is, it's a wonderful profession, but your day-to-day is completely different every single day. There is not one day I wake up and go, this is the same day as going to be yesterday, like I have a 9-to-5 job, or I have this type of career, or I'm working on this thing. You get an audition at 7 p.m. and now your night is done. you have to focus, memorize, prep, do it in auditions at 10 a.m. in the morning. Then they're going to call you at 9 a.m. and say you got another voice audition at 2. And then your day is like completely what you had planned out destroyed. So you're – and now I have a baby and a wife, so it completely – you know, it changed than when I was a single person. I could fit little time in for myself to do things. So you try and find the time or wake up early or do these things. But the life that we work at, you know, being in this kind of industry can just throw your whole system awry.
Right.
And
this is really this what you're describing. This is like the skill of a working actor, a successful actor. Yes, there's the whole acting thing.
Yeah.
But on top of that, it's managing your resources, your time, your focus, your energy, your emotions. It feels like really, if you talk to anybody who's managed to make some inroads or just even just hang in there, it's going to be the story of them hopefully doing the thing well, yeah, whether it's acting or music or whatever that pursuit is in the arts, but also figuring out how to manage the time and the emotions of it too.
Yeah, because we're, you know, most actors are not being paid while you're auditioning.
Exactly.
It's like,
yeah,
they're going out for free to work, to audition, yeah, 5, 6, 10, 2, 1 time a week.
Yeah.
And that's where they have to put their focus and time in, is when those things show up and go.
Yeah.
And then we, in between those kind of times, we have to find our pockets of little bits for ourselves. So when Jeff's sort of saying this, I want to just clarify why discipline is in time ways is challenging, at least for me. But when you do at least find some type of consistency, at least for me with meditation, I found that my life was just smoother.
Hmm.
So now I find pockets of like, okay, I feel myself getting to a place of, you know, internal turmoil or whatever you want to call it, a type of anxiety thing. And then you're like, I need to disappear. For me, it was float tanks.
Right.
And go do my thing and chill out and refocus and recenter and then come back. And that would recharge me sometimes for a week or two.
Right.
Just one of those sessions could really, really reset me.
Yeah. It's important to have some clarity when you want to express yourself, right? You
know?
Yeah, for sure. Before we continue on this conversation,
yeah,
little thread, which I'm enjoying, I want to make sure, because these conversations always just fly by, I want to have some background, some historical context on the sort of history of you and having the inclination to pursue performing.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, I know that you've been doing this for a long time. I know that you went to UVic in Victoria. But I'm curious, when I ask you that question, what are your thoughts about those moments early in life when you thought, this is something I want to do?
You know, I always tell this story, and now it's, to me, it's almost become like a story, but it really is a truthful story. I was in grade 2, and it was the first thing I'd ever done. I think prior to that, I'd seen a movie in the theater, and I was just in awe of just watching people on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then in grade 2, I had this audition for Little Red Riding Hood, the play we were doing, and I don't know why, I have no idea what drove me to feel this determination to book the role of the grandmother of Little Red Riding.
Okay.
I don't know why
that was unexpected.
I know, I was like, but I read for the grandmother.
It resonated for
it
you
resonated
somehow
for me at that age, and I just
I was, can kill this role.
I just thought it was funny. I didn't even think about it, the different sex aspect of, like,
sure,
the female. I was like, this role is funny to me.
Okay.
And I read it, and I was up against two girls for the role, so we all read for the role, and I went to town with it. And I went home, and I at the time I was very religious, so I went home and I prayed to God, and I was like, God, please, if there's any way of making this happen, I would love to play this role and be in this show. And then I got cast for the grandmother, and I, you know, wore a shower cap with, mm-hmm, a wig and like glasses and the whole thing, and I really changed my voice and everything. And this is great too. And we did the first performance, and I remember something I did. It's been so long now, and just something that the character did when I got on stage and we're doing this. And I heard this eruption from the audience of laughter, and my whole body just went like strange. Like I've never felt that before. And I have to say, I'll step into my real personal life at the time was very in turmoil. I had my father and my mom divorced and he'd moved to Greece. I'm now with a stepfather and his kids. And we had some battles at home and I was feeling like the most, I didn't really know how to love myself very well at the time. And it was having a very challenging time in my life. So hearing this roar from these people, from something that I just gave them and brought out, that
I'm going to assume it was laughter.
It was laughter. It was full laughter, like from them. And I just internally felt something I never really felt before. And it was almost like a feeling of being at home. Like, I feel whatever this is, I love this.
You were hooked.
And I want this.
Instantly.
Yeah. I want to do whatever this is. And if that, I can give that to people and that's what they can offer back, please. Like, that sounds like the greatest feeling in the world. Mm-hmm. And then my next audition was for The Jungle Book at the school, I think the next season or something like that. And I wanted to play Mowgli, but I ended up getting a cast for the elephant's rear. Like, they had these elephants. And I remember that was the first time I had a bit of an ego. I was like, I can't do that.
I know that there are no small parts, but this is ridiculous.
You can't even see me. I was like, but that was one of the greatest moments of my sort of life. And I didn't really know that it was a career at that time. Like, I didn't think about it as a career.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until I was older and a few grades later, you know, grade 5, 6, I think it was, somewhere in there. And I started to realize, oh, there's more to this. And so I started joining the Rocky Mountain Shakespeare Company as like a 12 to 15 year old, and would do little bit parts, play the fairies, do all these things and help with their shows and go around and give pamphlets. I would just start learning, and in drama class, I was the kid who would go home and memorize monologues and come back and perform the next day and make my teacher cry. Like, I just was hooked. By grade 10, I produced and directed and starred in my own small version of Hamlet, and I even brought, like, real swords from World War I and II that were my grandfather's, and, like, corked them and fought and did, like, and I was just trying to create. I was just trying to do everything I could, and it wasn't until, like, I think grade 10 that I started going, I want to do this as my career, because my parents wanted me to, you know, the story, you might be a doctor, a lawyer, whatever
right.
it is. Everyone wants you to have that secure thing. And when you say you want to be an actor, you're like...
It's like, what about the status and the stability?
Yeah, they're like, please don't. and I get it. It's a challenging career to step into. I totally understand.
I mean, it's in a way, it's the antithesis of whatever that inclination is for, as you say, an immigrant family to say, please become a dentist, please become a lawyer. It really is the opposite. Whether or not it's any better or worse is subjective, but it's the complete opposite in terms of what it's for. I mean, it's about individual expression.
Yeah.
At the expense of certainty, as if there is such a thing as certainty, but increased statistical probability of stability and moving in the direction of certainty. Yeah, I can imagine for a lot of, it's such a cliche that, you know, I think when people talk about choosing a career in the arts, people will ask, what do your parents think? You know, I never really understood that because my parents have always been, I guess they never gave me the sense of why that would be a concern. And that's to my benefit. I'm lucky in that respect. But it makes sense to me as I get older and think about, you know, what it might be like to be a parent, why some might feel that way. Well, what's your family like now? In terms of the perspective of what you do, obviously you've shown, in my eyes, a great deal of success. You've had a lot of success. You've shown the legitimacy of this ambition. What do they think about it?
You know, I have a lot of pride at this point from them, and I'm very grateful for that.
That's nice.
Yeah, my mother was a good supporter. I have to say just to jump on that.
Sure.
She was a ballet dancer, and then she taught me ballet when I was young too.
Oh wow!
So I learned ballet from her a bit. So she understood a bit of the art stuff. I think she just had a lot of reservations and was scared for me and worried that, you know, like, you want to be an actor. It's like the first thing. Good luck, right?
Yeah.
So I think she was just worried, but she did do her best. And when that grade 10 came and I did this play and I played an old man, and she was kind of, first time she felt very floored by a performance. It was one of those performances, I don't know if anybody's an actor out there, but there are moments the opposite of laughter where it's complete silence.
Mm.
And you kind of, you kind of own a room is the only way I can sort of describe it, where any movement you do, any single thing is so present and everyone is with you. You could drop a pin and it would be heard.
Hmm.
It's the opposite of laughter and the most captivating feeling, but in the other form. Hmm. And that was the first time it was a drama piece for me that I
people are with you.
With me. And
they're with you.
Yeah. And that, so was the thing was like, okay, I think I can act. Like, I think I can do this. I think I can, if I'm playing an old man and I'm holding an audience and I'm only in grade 10, maybe I can be all right. And I was doing improv and all these other stuff. So I really wanted something different. We ended up moving to Victoria the next year in grade 11. And that's where my life sort of changed. We ended up in this cool school my mom found for me. She went to all the high schools in Victoria and then found two. I think it was between Royal Oak and Claremont.
Interesting.
Yeah. And she's like, these are all this and these are the theaters and this is what they have. And I'm so grateful to this day for her to go do that, because we ended up finding first school I went to was Claremont.
Right.
I looked in, had a new $1 million theater.
Right. Built, I remember that.
Had a dance studio and all this stuff. And I found, like retired sort of Broadway actress ended up being my teacher. And I walked into the school and
was that Sylvia Hosey?
Sylvia Hosey.
Right.
Yeah. Sarah Jean's mom. Yeah. Wow. And I walked in school and I auditioned for a musical, which I didn't even know what a musical was, because I'd only done, I only thought of plays. I never thought of a musical at that right. time. And my sister was an opera singer. So I understood singing, but I just didn't know that, oh, you mean like they sing and do acting at the same time?
How did they do that? What a concept.
I've heard of the Phantom, but I'd never seen it. So I auditioned and I was, I think, the only guy who could do a full scale like of the singing audition, and I got cast in the lead of this new, like, it was called Dames at Sea. It was an old musical, but it was, I think Cole Porter maybe wrote it. It's been so long, I can't remember. Apologies, Cole Porter.
He'll be fine.
Yeah. I remember auditioning for that or getting it and being surprised, like, okay, now you got to learn how to sing and dance and act together. Yeah. And I had some ballet training, thankfully, a little bit, just to sort of get me in. And that show really changed my whole life. I got into musicals. I started practicing singing more and dancing more in different styles and learning about, jazz. And Sylvia was amazing, too. So she gave me tons of resources to study and learn. And I started learning about all the oldies. And
you're getting a level of education while in high school that would really probably be more you'd expect in a college for performing.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I felt like I got a full 1920s, 30s movies education up to the 70s, 80s of just, like, all the Broadway shows, all the old school Gene Kelly, Fred Astaire, the Busley Berkeley, who would shoot all those cool collage movements of people moving around, creating images. I just learned. And all the tappers from the old days, Sammy Davis Jr. and all this crew. And I was just like, I fell in love. That was truly those 2 years of high school. And by the way, just so everyone knows what happened, at grade 11, my stepfather at the time got cancer. My whole family had to move back to our hometown in Lake Louise and Golden.
Okay.
And I chose not to, against my family. And I worked 3 jobs. 7 days a week.
You're still in high school at this point?
In during the summer. So we live in a tourist town in Lake Louise. I just went to work. I just worked every single day, sometimes 2 jobs for sure a day, all summer. And I had maybe 1 day off the entire summer. And that's like 2.5 months straight of like discipline, like hardcore. I'm working. One of the funnest summers I ever had. And I promised myself I wouldn't buy a drink. That was like one of my things, because it was like save money.
Right, right.
I've never been more drunk in my life, because more people bought me drinks than I've ever experienced. And I never partied harder than my whole life, and I never worked harder in my whole life. Wow. To this day, I don't think, like, apart from having a baby. Let's just like,
right, right.
The only closest exhaustion I've ever had is baby wins.
Yeah, but you're now being reminded of exhaustion. Yeah.
And then I moved back to Victoria on my own and paid my own way for grade 12. And did 3 shows, like 2 musicals and a play, and not just at the high school, but at downtown at the McPherson with the
VOS.
Yeah.
Right.
And great.
Sorry, what show was that at BOS? I'm curious.
Oh, I did On Broadway.
Okay.
That year.
This is Victoria Operatic Society for disclosure. And I ask that because I've done shows with them too, so I'm just curious.
Yeah, I love them. Yeah. That was On Broadway. It was a musical review show of like all different musicals.
Nice.
And then, sorry, this story's taking so long.
No, I'm enjoying it. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because you and I have actually never talked about this Victoria history for you.
Right.
I mean, I don't think I knew that. I knew that you went to UVic, but I didn't actually know that you'd had some Victoria experience before that. And I'm aware of Claremont. For me, I'm also from Victoria. I also was heavily involved in theater at Oak Bay High School. And I knew that whole time that Claremont was considered the other.
Sorry, Oak Bay. Did I say Royal Oak?
You did. Oak Bay.
That was my apologies. Royal Oak is where Claremont is, actually.
Right.
Yeah. Oak Bay was the other opposing high school.
Wow. Now, sorry, what year did you graduate from high school?
2001.
Okay, cool. So our timing was slightly off.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was either your school or Claremont.
That's crazy. That's wild. So you had that summer where you saved up all that money, yeah, and then you had the conviction to move back to Victoria on your own,
yeah,
somewhat against the wishes of your family.
Oh,
so not just
very much against
so very much against the wishes of your family. Your family's going through something tough. I'm sure you're managing a lot of emotions with that. You work your ass off to pay your way, still as a young man, not yet an adult technically, going to high school. And I'm imagining from what I'm hearing, this is because you were single-mindedly focused on benefiting from this opportunity to gain skills in the thing that you love, which is theater, with this mentor that you'd found.
Yeah.
You didn't want to lose that mentor, that opportunity.
I mean, I had a great girlfriend too at the time, and she was a dancer, and she taught me a lot, and she was really lovely. But I also had this troupe of other talented performers that I never had that before.
Right.
So I felt like I had this little family.
Didn't want to lose it.
Yeah. And on top of that, the best mentor I could ever ask for, who was so supportive and helped us learn so much. We did the first musical of Archie Andrews, just for all those guys who like Riverdale. I'm the first Reggie who ever performed on stage. That was grade 12. Grade 12 was crazy. Yeah. And I feel like I barely slept that year, but it was
but well worth it.
Yeah. And then I went to UVic after that for a year. And I felt like I was, not to knock UVic, by the way, I think UVic is a very wonderful school with lots of great things involved. I just felt for me at the time, it was a technical school for behind the scenes of theater.
Sure.
And I thought
you wanted to get on stage.
I wanted stage.
Well, I understand that. I've talked about it on the show. I have my own experience going to university for 1 year for theater. And I've also been very diplomatic to say that I don't mean to knock the institutions or the approach to it, but just for me, and I think like for you as well, my experience was this is great to just do the thing. Like, yeah, I want to talk about it, but I want to make sure we do the thing. And it can be a challenge, I think, sometimes if you're built the way that you are, and I can relate to it, where you're gung-ho to just like, okay, let's create, let's make it happen. At some point, you want to dive in. You want to play.
I couldn't get a part at UVic first year.
You're like, in a way, not allowed to.
You're not allowed, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly, that was my experience at York University where they said, you were not allowed to act this year. And I said, okay, I'll go act off campus then. And they said, you are not allowed to act off campus.
I never asked. That's funny.
You just did it?
I did. I was doing,
good for you.
I did Sweeney Todd with VOS downtown that year.
Yeah. And that's the thing. That's the way to do it, man.
Yeah.
I mean, again, like we both said, we're not knocking the theoretical approach to any given thing. But certainly my conception is that you got to do the thing, man. You got to do the thing.
Once I learned the politics of it all, I was like, what, really?
Yeah. It's surprising, right?
Yeah. It's just like you're not basing it off individual, you know, where people are sort of at and helping them sort of go from there. And I get it. I started to see why. I get the structure and what that means. And so I understood. And then I was like, okay, so with that, is this for me?
Yeah.
And at the end of the year, I was going to go, I decided I'm going to go on a trip to Europe and make up my mind. Just before I left, I had an interesting conversation with one of the professors when I was working at Mark's Work Warehouse. Oh no, Eddie Bauer.
Oh.
Eddie Bauer at the...
On Government Street?
Yeah, the mall there. Was that not downtown?
Oh, Mayfair.
Mayfair.
Sure. And we're just like nerding out on Victoria here, aren't we?
So I was at Mayfair Center at Eddie Bauer, and one of the professors came in, and he wasn't one of my teachers, but he was one of the elder professors and saw me in a little performance that we'd done.
Okay.
And he came up and chatted with me, and he gave me some really lovely compliments and stuff about what he saw. And then he asked me, what do you want to do in the next, what are you doing next year? Are you staying? And I told him what I really wanted. I said, this is how I feel. And this is what I really am sort of wanting. And I wanted to move to Vancouver possibly and pursue this professionally. I said, I'm not sure where I'm at and all this stuff, but this is my experience so far, and this is what I feel.
Yeah.
The guy just dead stared me in the middle of the store and gave me one of the most beautiful speeches. I wish I could remember it all right now, but just like, I just remember the feeling it gave me. And he told me to do it. And he said, go, do it. Put your whole heart and mind to it. Just do it. And it was longer than that, but he gave me this really nice lead in and just hit me with this. And my whole body was vibrating and I was in this kind of state of
like, validating okay. your intuition, yeah. It sounds like.
Yeah, just as someone who barely knew me but saw me perform and gave me sort of this great validation, yeah. Mm. And also just encouragement to go for it.
Yeah.
So I remember that my manager came up after he had left and she's like, are you okay? Like, that's how intense the speech was. Like, it literally radiated across a room.
Are you going to be able to sell flannel garments today? Or
so I did.
Or
I went
pleated khakis? Because you could see physical reaction. I can only imagine for somebody who's, you know, at this point as a young man that spent a number of years feeling like this is something I believe in, I'm going to invest myself in, I got to find the path. I don't think this is the path. What might the path be? Geez, I don't know what to do. And then to have somebody offer some mentorship. I'm so struck when I talk to people by the role of mentorship and role modeling in people's lives. And this just sounds like one of those moments for you in your life.
It was so neat from someone I didn't even really know.
Right.
To have such an impact, yeah.
Mm.
It was a really beautiful moment, and I'll always remember that as like a pivot point.
You right.
know? It was like a pivoting point in your internal self.
Yeah.
Where you kind of give yourself permission.
What are some other moments like that in your life? I mean, now you've piqued my curiosity. I'm sure you have plenty of those moments, but can you think of any that have similarly been definitive in terms of crystallizing your resolve to move in the direction that you are moving in creatively and artistically and life-wise, I guess.
That's a great question.
No small questions here on Now We're Talking.
Yeah, I was like, that was a leap. I had to tell a story to get to that. I'll find it. I'll find it.
Sure.
Give me a minute. It'll come.
Sure,
in the meantime, I'll just finish it because I did go to Europe.
I traveled. Please, yes.
And I looked at the world and I was, as much as I could throughout Europe at that time, I went for a few months and I was with that same girlfriend, and we both had gone on that trip knowing that this was our last trip together, because she was going to go off become a dancer, and I helped her sort of convince her to pursue her dream of being in Cirque du Soleil, and we both knew our lives were going in different directions. So
that's an interesting situation.
It was really neat, and it was great. It was still a great trip between us. And by the way, she went off and went studied modern and contemporary and all this, and then after that. Audition for Cirque. She has been doing the Las Vegas show of Ka for the last almost 10 years.
Wow, that must be rewarding for you to see that play out for her.
I just saw the show for my first time in November with her in it because she's finishing her run on it. And
what was that like to see it and then to talk to her about it afterwards?
Oh, it was great. It was one of the I was crying. I was so happy seeing her, and I had tears because we're still really good friends. And and you know, I just got chills of how grateful I was to see that come to fruition in her life. And her parents were totally against it when she was younger and wanted her to be a scientist. And she's like, I want to do this. And it was so out left field, right? Mm. Go join Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah.
First of all, the odds of getting in, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, when you think of all that. And I'm just so proud of her. So proud that I could have been a part of that for one. And just so proud that she did it all the way.
Mm-hmm. And I bet she never forgot the fact that you encouraged her to do it.
I won't say no.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, so then I decided to move to Vancouver. That was like the most challenging switch.
On your own?
Yeah.
You showed up in Vancouver not knowing many people?
Yes. I showed up Vancouver only really knowing my uncle. And I think it was it.
It must be funny to look back on that now when it's such a big, you know, you've lived here for a number of years. You're part of a large community of colleagues and friends and to think about getting to this place.
Yeah. I did another summer, like the summer before, saved up enough just so I could move here. Vancouver's a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
It was like even then it was.
Yeah.
And I just went for it. It was probably the most challenging year I've had that year. It was, you know, I dislocated my knee. I did like trying to hold down a waiting job. But I was also like, that's the year I met all my closest friends that are still my best bros to this day. like
this is when you're 20-ish or how old?
Yeah, I was about 19, 20-ish. Yeah, somewhere there. And I can't. And ever since then, it's just been like it's the actor's life. I'll call it. You know, that's what it is. I didn't book a role for quite a while, and then I finally got a show in Chimenez, Annie.
Okay.
The musical. And so
Chimenez, of course, has the professional theater, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was my first professional job. And the director was my high school, because she retired.
Oh, okay.
Sylvia Hosey.
Right,
so
cool.
she hired me for my first sort of professional job.
That's a big moment, eh?
Oh, it's huge. Yeah.
I mean, that's a very reputable theater company there, Chimenez.
Yeah.
So to have that opportunity and to do the 8 shows a week thing and for a few weeks.
Yeah.
Because, of course, when you're doing a high school musical, like you rehearse all year or for a long time, weeks and months. And then you do like 5 or 6 shows or something. It's a big difference when you actually do that 8-show-a-week thing. You really get to sink your teeth into it, right?
Yeah.
And live in it for a while.
86 shows, I think we did that summer.
Isn't that wild? Yeah.
It's like, that's a lot of shows when you think about like just a small portion of time.
Yeah. And as I say, you get more of a chance to just kind of like really live it for a while. Yeah.
And that was actually because I made a mistake. I broke my foot earlier that year. And then later when it rehealed and after, I was doing... Annie and I dislocated my knee at an audition for West Side Story.
Oh boy.
And I got the part. I just had to re-heal before the show began.
Were they aware that you dislocated it? They're like, and they admire that. We like this young man.
Because I
we
told like him, I'll be okay. I'll be okay. I told him in time, I will. And I was. I did it. But wow, it was that was a funny year. It was a lot of injuries.
I almost feel like that should be an inspiration to young actors. Fake an injury. I know that for you, it was legitimate. But feign an injury so that either they feel badly for you or they admire your conviction or your gumption. And I mean, what's it going to hurt to fake it? Come on. Maybe just as like a fallback position. Like, I don't think this is going well.
Oh, man. I still have more shows to do in Annie with the partial MCL tear. You know what I mean?
Really?
Full shows to
dancing?
Do. Dancing? Dancing, yeah. I had,
like, was it painful?
Oh, yeah. We had to change a bit of the choreography. I couldn't do the
Simplify
high lifts
it.
That I did lifting girls up and stuff. So, but yeah. So anyway, the jump to me deciding to... focus on film and TV more and trying to make that a change. From theater to film was a big transition for me to figure out the differences.
Yeah.
I failed for many years. So all you actors out there, fail. It's okay.
You must fail away, folks.
Yes. Yeah. And it's forgiving while you're young. Trust me.
Isn't that hard too? I mean, knowing quite a few actors who have done film and TV as well as stage work, when you get to that place where you're now, let's say, an equity member and you're getting paid decently to do the thing. You can say, I'm doing the thing. I'm doing this production and it's a successful production. But of course, you take yourself out of the market for working in film and TV when you occupy those large blocks of time. So sometimes there's sometimes there's a huge, and maybe that's a deterrent for some agents to work with an actor who's not available to say yes to work that comes through. So is that a scary moment to take a step away from something that's working, getting gigs, doing theater, and taking that plunge to try to get booked for TV and film?
Yes.
In a word, yes, it is.
It's the idea of there are opportunities coming that you don't know. And if you're not available for them when they show up, you have, they're just, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
And those opportunities might be amazing and you don't know. So
That's
kind of it. That's where it really lies, as well as for one day of film is the same pay as a week and a half of theater.
Yeah. So the math on this, whether it's the time, the money, whatever, it's an interesting. It comes back to what we were saying earlier in this conversation about juggling and managing your resources and putting yourself in a situation where you get to do what you set out to do in the first place, which is pursue your artistic impulses, trying to reconcile that with the other part of the brain that is like time management. You know, there really is two skills. There's that intuitive artistic self and then the independent contractor person that's trying to insert yourself in those situations where you get to do the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have the other pivotal moment.
Please.
At least one of them.
That's good timing because we've just got a couple minutes left and this is going to be a beautiful way to finish the show.
The moment, I guess it's an in-between stage of this, but it's first when I decided to become a husband, but it really kicked in even more when I decided, when I knew and we made the choice, but really when we found out we're having a child. and dads and moms and parents know this, I'm sure, all over, but there is a change within one's internal programming that is so cool. And the thing that it made pivotal for me was I felt like everything up to this point has been practice or play or working towards getting a career or wanting to be an actor or wanting to do this and that sort of, that wanting but not fully committing and being. And when I knew I was having a kid, I was like, I am going to be a guide. I'm a role of a father, but I'm guiding someone through life at this point once that child's born. That's my job.
Right.
I have to be a teacher, mentor, guide for this person, right? And I was just like,
what have I learned and what am I now ready to share?
Yeah. And I was like, okay, I have to step up into myself and be the greatest version of the highest vision of myself. And that also means in my career and in my work and all the stuff. It's not just play time for me anymore.
Right.
I'm gonna play and have fun.
Right.
But it's committed to like my core because I have to provide. I have to show up and deliver.
Sounds like a hell of a catalyzing force. And when I think about my own efforts with this show and other things, I'm thinking I need to get some people pregnant. And with that note, Mike, thanks for coming in. We're up. Our time's up. But thanks so much for coming, man. Really appreciate it.
That was fast.
Yeah, it flies by, eh?
Yeah.
Okay, man. Thanks.
All right.
Cheers.